This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Changes since then. They feature the program Action Speaks, which examines underappreciated 20th century dates that changed America.
Voices from the Edge will be interviewing Paul Gorski on white privilege and racism on Thursday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Tune in to listen to the interview regarding race, privilege, anti-racism, anti-poverty activism, education, women's rights, immigrants' rights, and more. That's Voices from the Edge, this Thursday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., only on KBOO Portland.
This Wednesday at 6 p.m., tune in to Treasures from the KBOO Vault. We'll feature an interview conducted by Margaret Butler with two representatives of Voices of Hope and Anger, women who are fighting the presence of United States military bases domestically and internationally.
Who have, through sharing our stories, our personal experiences, and our work opposing militarism, have made connections. And we have established the fact that our struggles are linked. And that's sometimes difficult to do just with words.
And we'll also listen to a recording of Joan Baez performing in the early 1970s at Reed College. That's this Wednesday at 6 p.m. here on KBOO Portland.
Arun Gandhi is the fifth grandson of his iconic grandfather, Mohandas Mahatma Gandhi. He traveled to the Pacific Northwest recently to talk about his work on his grandfather's legacy. In this interview, I'll be talking with Arun Gandhi. Arun Manila Gandhi was born as the fifth grandson of Mahatma Gandhi through his second son, Manila. Arun's father, along with his mother, Sushila, were living in South Africa in the mid-1930s when Arun was born. These were the days of apartheid when an Indian family in Durban suffered many hardships. Growing up, Arun was rejected by whites and Africans alike for neither being white enough or black enough, and he suffered much violence at the hands of both because of it. Mr. Gandhi, thank you very much for talking with me. As you grew up as Gandhi's grandson, what was it like?
It was difficult because I grew up in South Africa at a time when there was a lot of hate and prejudice there, and I became a victim of all that. And I wanted eye for an eye justice and wanted to fight back. And that is when my parents took me to India, and I lived with grandfather, and grandfather taught me about anger. And he said, anger is like electricity. It's just as useful and just as powerful, but only if we use it intelligently. But it can be just as deadly and destructive if we abuse it. So just as we channel electrical energy and bring it into our lives and use it for the good of humanity, we must learn to channel anger in the same way so that we can use it for the good of humanity rather than abuse it. So he taught me that I should use the anger I was feeling towards the people who were prejudiced to try to change things, try to change them and change society so that this kind of hate and prejudice doesn't exist.
Arun's parents sent Arun to be with his grandfather at the age of 12, and he remained with him until he was assassinated 2 years later in 1948. Arun experienced firsthand the turbulent period India was going through as it tried to break free from oppressive British rule. He saw how the British overlords and the Indian nationalists clashed in that struggle for liberation, but he also saw the effectiveness of the doctrine of nonviolence his grandfather had been preaching and practicing.
He never asked people to do anything that he didn't do himself. So it was through his life that we learned things. And, you know, I think in recent times he was the only person who could justifiably say that my life was my message.
When Gandhi was assassinated, Arun returned to Durban and his parents. He was so enraged that his grandfather had been killed that for a time he sought revenge. His parents had to remind him of his grandfather's main message, which was, never react immediately in anger. Arun's parents emphasized forgiveness and encouraged him to dedicate his life to peacemaking. When you were listening to him tell you these things as a child, did it ever occur to you that someday you would be doing the exact same thing that he was doing?
No, I didn't. I mean, I wasn't that bright a kid. But he had a way of teaching that remained in my mind. And as I grew up and began to reflect on it and even study closely his life and his work, I recalled how important all the lessons were. And that's when it dawned on me that I have a legacy that I need to share with other people as much as possible.
Mahatma Gandhi taught Arun many lessons, not only about peace, but about conservation. Here is Arun Gandhi speaking at the Michael J. Fox Theater in Vancouver, British Columbia, about the lesson of the pencil.
I was coming home one evening from school and I just happened to look at the pencil. It was about 3 inches long. And I thought I deserved a better pencil. This is too small for anybody to use. And so without a second thought, I just threw that pencil away. Because I was so sure that grandfather would give me a new pencil when I asked him for one. But that evening when I went and asked him for a new pencil, instead of giving me one, he subjected me to a lot of questions. He wanted to know how the pencil became small and where did I throw it away and why did I throw it away and on and on and on. And I couldn't understand why he was making such a fuss over a little pencil until he told me to go out and look for it. And I said, you must be joking. That you don't expect me to look for a little pencil in the dark? He said, oh yes, I do. He has a flashlight. And he sent me out with a flashlight to look for this pencil, and I must have spent about 2 hours searching for it. And when I finally found it and brought it to him, he said, now I want you to sit here and learn two very important lessons. The first lesson is that even in the making of a simple thing like a pencil, we use a lot of the world's natural resources. And when we throw them away, we are throwing away the world's natural resources. And that is violence against nature. And the second lesson is that because in an affluent society we can afford to buy all these things in bulk, we overconsume the resources of the world. And because we overconsume them, we are depriving people elsewhere of these resources and they have to live in poverty. And that is violence against humanity. And that was the first time I realized that all of these little things that we do every day, consciously and unconsciously, all of them are acts of violence.
That excerpt was from In the Footsteps of Gandhi, a feature documentary directed by Garth Andrew Dyke.
So the work that you're doing now, is it in the tradition of what your grandfather was doing, or has it adapted to the more modern times, or is the mission the same regardless of what the age is?
No, the philosophy has to change. No philosophy should remain static because then it becomes outdated. So philosophy has to be changed, but the change should occur within the parameters of the kernel of the philosophy. And so you can't move away from nonviolence, but the application of nonviolence and the understanding of nonviolence has to keep changing.
Arun Gandhi is a Hindu like his grandfather, but expresses universalist views. Hindu universalism conceives the whole world as a single family that deifies one truth. This means that universalism accepts all forms of belief and dismisses divisions and distinctions between religions. But Gandhi differs from his grandfather in that he is not an ascetic or someone who avoids worldly possessions or material value. He has not dedicated himself to a life of poverty. However, he has chosen to focus not only on peace, but many other issues that affect the welfare of humanity.
Yeah, I have tried to modernize it and bring it into more focus. And I have seen that his philosophy was not simply about conflict resolution or political conflict resolution. It was about changing people and changing attitudes and changing relationships. And that is why he said that we must become the change we wish to see in the world. If we don't change, we cannot change the world. And if we cannot change the world, then we will continue to practice the culture of violence that exists today instead of becoming more peaceful and living in respect and harmony with each other.
As he mentioned earlier, one of the lessons Mahatma taught Arun was how violence against the earth comes from an unawareness of one's personal responsibility to the earth. This is a protest prayer written by Arun Gandhi and recited by members of an anti-fracking group in New York's state capitol. Do people ever look at you and listen to you and find themselves in awe of you and of your legacy?
They certainly are in awe of my legacy. And I don't know whether they are in awe of what I tell them. Of course, the only judgment for that is that whenever I speak, large crowds come to listen to me, and so I feel that I am saying something that makes sense to people, and that's why they come to listen to it over and over again.
Well, it's a two-part question, because the other part of the question is, do you ever look at them and think, inside myself, I feel like an ordinary man?
Mm-hmm. I am an ordinary man. There's no doubt about it. An ordinary man with a very great legacy, and so that's why I think that I need to share that legacy as much as possible. And I've devoted my life to taking it to people all over the world, wherever they are interested.
I guess the question I'm getting at is the humility that I think it would take to not let your legacy take you over. I mean, because ego is probably one of the things that was at the center of the thing that your grandfather was trying to heal.
Yeah, and that is why he was able to practice nonviolence so efficiently, because he was able to crush his ego. And I think to a large extent I've been able to do the same thing, although not to the extent of my grandfather, but I have been able to control and crush the ego and don't let it take over.
Is that the key to finding the solutions to political conflict and military conflict? Individuals must seek to crush their own egos?
Yes, because ego is what leads us to aggression. And I think one of the biggest problems in the United States is an inflated ego of being the superpower and the only power in the world, and nobody should mess around with us. And it's that ego that is leading us into more and more violence.
Arun Gandhi moved to the United States with his wife Sunanda in 1987 and began work on a study of prejudice internationally. Later, they moved to Memphis and founded the Mahatma Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence. In 1996, as part of a yearly celebration of the work of both his grandfather and the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, he co-founded the Season of Nonviolence. But despite these good works, Arun Gandhi's career has been at times controversial. Although his support for the doctrine of nonviolence never wavered, he seemed to accuse Israeli Jews of using their history with the Holocaust as an excuse to continue to use fear and aggression as a way to subjugate neighboring Palestinians, calling it a culture of violence. These comments forced Arun Gandhi to resign from his own institute in 2008.
When you, I have a personal question to ask you. In your family, do all members of your family, of your close family and of your distant family, do they all aspire to follow the teachings of your grandfather, or does your family contain family members, as do all families, where some are the black sheep and some are the good and some are the troubled? And I mean, I'm just wondering, not everybody has the good fortune of having someone like Gandhi in their family tree.
Right. Of course, I can't say that all the members of the Gandhi family are following his footsteps, but in whatever way they can, to the extent they can, they're all trying to. Just as I am, I won't say that I, entirely follow in his footsteps, but I'm trying as much as possible within the parameters that I am faced with.
I wanted to ask you, why do you think it's so difficult for humanity to learn this lesson? Because humanity has been warring with itself, warring with each other, for hundreds, thousands of years. And you would think that after so much bloodshed, after so much destruction and displacement and misery, you would think that humanity would learn. I mean, we seem to learn everywhere else. We learn how to make better buildings. We learn how to cook food better. We learn better sanitation, better communication techniques. But we just don't seem to be able to learn this. Why do you think that is?
It goes back to the ego, humanity's ego, and also the desire to control, and we exercise that desire right from our homes when we control our children through fear of punishment. And that is the first step in the culture of violence, and that grows ultimately in society, and everybody seeks to control everybody else through fear. The governments control each other through fear, and international relationships are based on fear. That's why we need a strong army and all the weapons of mass destruction, because it's only through fear that we can control other people. So whenever there is fear involved, I know it is quick. We can build weapons, we can threaten people and control them, but unfortunately, people have the ability to get out of that fear. And so we have to keep escalating the fear and to the nth degree. And now we are faced with the situation where we can't exercise the amount of fear that we want to. So nonviolence is about controlling through respect and love and, understanding and acceptance. And that takes a little more commitment. And we don't want to commit to anything like that, because we see that as a weak sign of weakness. It's all the brainwashing that we have been subjected to for centuries, ever since we became sort of civilized. And I say sort of because I don't think we are really civilized. Material possessions don't make people civilized. It's how they behave with each other that makes them civilized.
This age that we seem to have entered in, this age of guerrilla warfare and terrorism, do you think that there's any message in why conflicts seem to have become more personal? I mean, to attack a military target is one thing, but then to attack innocent people is another.
That is the tragedy of violence. You see, if you follow rules in violence, then you will never win against a powerful enemy. And so you have to find other ways of destroying that enemy. And so all these things come up, terrorism and fear of... Now, one man's... has been able to change our life completely through terror, acts of terrorism. And that, you know, is an indication that somewhere we have gone wrong with our relationship with that part of the world. And if we don't look at that mistake that we have made and try to rectify that mistake, we are going to go deeper and deeper into this whole cycle of violence. And those people who don't have the weapons that we have are going to find different ways of attacking us. They're going to change the rules of attacking. And that's how they expect to hurt us. And that's a tragedy. And that's the tragedy of the culture of violence we have to continue to face.
This is Arun Gandhi speaking at Lehigh University on the problem of terrorism versus nonviolence in the aftermath of 9/11.
For almost the whole day, I was paralyzed, just as all of you were paralyzed. Couldn't imagine that this kind of thing happened. And what should be our response? And from the next day, I was flooded with telephone calls from all over the country, people asking me what is the nonviolent response to this situation. And I decided to write an article on this subject and offered it to various newspapers and media, but none of them were prepared to publish it because they all said this is not the time to talk about peace. And I said, if this is not the time, when do you talk about peace? But since they were not willing to publish it, I put it up on our website and printed it in our newsletter. And the gist of the article was that declaring a war on terrorism is not the answer. We have already demonstrated to the world that we are a superpower in terms of our military strength. Now is the time for us to demonstrate to the world that we can also be a superpower in terms of our moral strength. And that we are not going to respond to this kind of senseless violence by more violence, but we are going to take a moral position on this and do the right thing. And the right thing to do at that time would have been for us to do some introspection, to find out, where did we go wrong? Why are our relations with the rest of the world so bad that these people were motivated to attack us and cause such distress and harm to innocent people? And then repair our relationships with the foreign countries. It's obvious that our relationship has not been ideal, because our relationships, like all foreign policy relationships everywhere else, have been based on what is good for the United States or what is good for us. Each country thinks only about themselves and what is good for themselves. And that is a very selfish way of looking at things. And such selfish attitudes can only lead to conflict. And I think that we have reached the stage of the United States when we no longer need to look at what is good for us, but we can look at what is good for the world.
It makes sense to know that Arun Gandhi is not just a spokesperson for peace, but a social activist as well. Shortly after he and his wife were married, the South African government told him that she would not be allowed to accompany him back there. They decided to live in India, and Arun worked for 30 years as a journalist for the Times of India. Together, they started projects for the social and economic uplifting of the oppressed using constructive programs, the backbone of Gandhi's philosophy of nonviolence. The programs changed the lives of more than 500,000 people in over 300 villages, and they still continue to grow. Sunanda died in February 2007, and the family is working to establish a school in one of the poorest rural areas of India in her name. But Arun is also the author of several books. The first, A Patch of White, is about life in a prejudiced South Africa. Then he wrote two books on poverty and politics in India, followed by a compilation of Mahatma Gandhi's wit and wisdom. He also edited a book of essays on World Without Violence, Can Gandhi's Vision Become Reality? And more recently, wrote The Forgotten Woman, The Untold Story of Kasturi, the wife of Mahatma Gandhi, jointly with his late wife Sunanda. Arun and Sunanda also dedicated a lot of their work helping children using Gandhi's philosophy of Sarvodaya, the welfare of all children. They rescued and found homes for almost 130 abandoned children and developed economic programs that successfully changed the lives of several thousand impoverished people. The new Gandhi Worldwide Education Institute was launched in May 2008 in the U.S. by Arun Gandhi. Its purpose is to promote community building in economically depressed areas of the world through the joining of Gandhian philosophies with vocational education for children and their parents. But Arun Gandhi's work with respect to children isn't just about delivering services to children. It's also about delivering messages to them. Do you find it easier to communicate this message to adults, or do you spend any time trying to tell it to children?
I have. Just yesterday I spoke to 1,100 middle school children, and they understood everything that I said, and I'm sure that I've been able to plant seeds in some of their minds. So I go to any audience that is interested in listening to me, and it can be from children to adults.
I was looking at some of the stuff that you have been involved in, the Humanism and Its Aspirations Manifesto, your Institute for Nonviolence at University of Rochester, your work in Salisbury University. I'm just wondering, what other venues do you want to try to reach out to? You've reached out to Catholic institutions and Palestinian institutions, and I'm just wondering, where else will you take your message?
I will take wherever people listen to me and are willing to give it a thought. I consider myself to be a peace farmer, and just like a regular farmer goes out into the fire fields and plants seeds and hopes and prays that he will get a good crop, I also do the same thing. I go and plant seeds in the minds of people who are listening to me, and hope that those seeds will germinate and we will have a good crop of peacemakers.
How many generations do you think that'll take?
God knows. It can be overnight or it can be several generations. Nobody knows. It's a question of commitment of the people. It's when the people decide that they want peace, that peace will come. Otherwise, you know, if we are going to wait for somebody else to start peace first, then everybody waits for everybody else.
But I think we can understand social justice and hunger and poverty and destitution in society only if we understand the philosophy of nonviolence. All of these negative things have to be brought out to the surface so that we can dehumanize people and kill them and destroy them and not feel hurt by it. But to practice nonviolence, we have to bring out all the positive aspects, all the love and respect and compassion and understanding that we are capable of. That has to come out and dominate our thinking and our relationships. So I have come here this evening to give you the grain of wheat that I got from my grandfather. And I hope that you won't let it rot and perish, but let it interact so that all of us together can transform this world and make it a better place for future generations. Thank you.
That was Arun Gandhi speaking to an audience at Cornell University about the importance of planting seeds of nonviolence for this generation and for subsequent generations. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak to me, Mr. Gandhi. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Goodbye.
Bye.
I'm Don Merrill, and I've been talking to Arun Manilal Gandhi. Thanks for listening.
KABU is a proud media sponsor of the third annual March Music Moderne. 32 concerts of 20th and 21st century music taking place at 18 venues throughout the month of March. 12 of these events are free. More information is available at marchmusicmodern.org. And tune in to A Different Nature, Monday, March the 4th from 8 to 10 p.m. for a two-hour preview of the month's events with March Music Modern's Artistic Director, Bob Priest.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9:31. Coming up next, we hear an interview with psychotherapist Dr. Harriet Fraud on capitalism, family, and family values. At 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia with your host, Chris Andre.
Let me turn now and welcome my guest. She is Dr. Harriet Fraud, a person with whom I collaborate from time to time, as many of you know. She is a psychotherapist, a hypnotherapist. She works in New York City. She's the author, most recently, of a book, together with myself and Stephen Resnick, called Class Struggle on the Home Front. She writes and publishes in a new service, Truth Out, but also in Tikkun magazine and website, International Psychohistory Journal, and several other places. So, Dr. Fraud, Harriet, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Today's discussion is going to focus on a topic called family values and the economy. We live here in the United States where a great deal of attention is paid to family values. Not just our conservative fellow citizens, but almost everybody feels the need to say often that we're committed to family values, that the family is an important institution, perhaps even the most important institution in our society, and that we are committed as a nation to support and encourage families and family values. Okay, that's what I want to talk about, but I want to start the conversation by raising two questions about the so